Welcome to What Makes Up Your Mind? Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health from the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University's School of Medicine. This is your invitation to meet the faculty dedicated to understanding our most complex organ, committed to curing mental illness, and inspired to help create a healthier, thriving world. Welcome to another mini-pod in our What Makes Up Your Mind mini-series, all about the Clinical Neuroscience Immersion Experience, or CNIX, through the Stanford Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences. If you've tuned into our other CNIX mini-pods, and hopefully our full podcast with Program Director Dr. Laura Turner-Essel, you already know the nuts and bolts of this unique program for high schoolers. It introduces them to the world of brain-mind science, and it fosters their own mental well-being through these two-week summer programs of projects, play, and presentations by renowned Stanford doctors and researchers. And it's not just the unparalleled access to these scientists and their work, it's also the life experience and inspiration they offer CNIX participants, and at a time just as these young adults are beginning to explore their own paths in life. It would be hard to find a more impactful example than the time they get to spend with Stanford professor and neurosurgeon Dr. Odette Harris. Dr. Harris treats all stages of traumatic brain injury, or TBI, from addressing acute injury as a clinician and neurosurgeon to the chronic effects during recovery. And her research is around the patterns and causes of TBI and how to expand neurosurgical care in underserved communities and in the developing world. So along with sharing her medical expertise, Dr. Harris also sparks discussion of medical ethics and the complex decision-making that is part of her work and, frankly, part of every adult life. I'm joined by Dr. Laura Turner-Essel as we meet Dr. Odette Harris.
Thank you, Odette, again, for being here with us. Participants always love to hear your talk on neurosurgery and ethics. I've heard you speak just about your career path and about how you got into the field of neurosurgery. So I just would love to hear from you about your profession and why you love it, why you've dedicated your life to this work.
Aw, thank you. Such kind words. I think memory is weird. I have a memory of how I got into what I do. And then my friends who were there at the time say, no, that's not what happened. So answering that question, I think, has become like a really funny thing for me, because we can actually tailor our memories in ways that fit into our narrative of what the world should be, or what we would like it to be. And that's actually the power of the human brain, as you guys know. And so I kind of like the fact that there are different perspectives. But my perspective was that I went to college wanting to do like one of three things. I was going to be a pediatrician. I was going to be a kindergarten teacher, or I was going to be an accountant or something random like that.
Oh, wow. That's quite a range.
right. I loved math. I loved kids. I loved, teaching, whatever. I mean, who knows? I was, going off to college. I ended up being pre-med. And then my senior year, I took a neuroscience class and fell in love with that. So I don't think it was a clear-cut path. But once I got to med school, I definitely knew I wanted to do neurosurgery. So when I got here, all the pieces were sort of, lined up. But I think the one that sort of was the final piece is, someone said to me, when you close your eyes and envision like what a doctor means to you as you embark on that career, there's a picture, and you spend a lot of medical school trying to fit that picture in with your experience, right? I didn't actually picture myself, interestingly enough, at the bedside with kids or, sitting in a clinic, long-term, those types of things. I didn't picture those things. And so I pictured like somebody running, to an emergency, somebody at a, dealing with those types of issues. And I think that actually felt more aligned with neurosurgery. And then there's the intellectual answer, right? It was the new frontier. Like, it was challenging. It's such an incredible area to do research in. The impact that my work could potentially hold was there. And all those things were true. But we all know that when you make these life decisions, even though there's this bigger picture, it does come down to those small moments of, does this fit how I see my life, how I see a doctor, the doctor that I want to be? Does it fit that? And does it feel like the right path? And I think in the end, neurosurgery felt like that. And then having mentors, I think, is the latter part of it, is that if you have people in the field that are saying to you, you know, welcome, I think you can do it. I think that's the other piece. And so I had that as well.
Speaking of how one sees a doctor, whether it's in their own mind, these students are going to be looking at possible career paths too. To see a doctor and to see you, the first Black woman neurosurgeon professor at Stanford, the second only in the nation, I mean, that's got to have a huge impact on these students and how they might see their path.
We hope, you know, we hope that, I think all of us, everyone who goes into academics hopes that their work, their very being, their interactions with every, you know, cohort of students, that we serve as role models and mentors to them. You know, we're educating the next generation and they're going to do the work when we can't do it anymore. So, you know, making sure that we are inspiring those kids. I don't think anyone goes into academics without that hope. And I think it's for everyone. Like, so for me, there was no Black woman neurosurgeon ahead of me to have served that role. But I had other mentors who sparked interests, you know, and who saw something in me and I could see something in them. And so I think it's looking for connections, whatever those connections might be, with the people who are educating you so that they can inspire you. And I think the natural connections are in gender and ethnicity and race and all the rest of it. But in fact, it can be any number of different connections, and any number of us could serve that. And I'm honored that, you know, kids gravitate towards my particular profile.
I think one of the awesome things about the talk that you often do for the CNIX program is that you talk about neurosurgery and some of the practical aspects of your role, but then you also bring in the question of ethics and some of the very complicated decisions that you have to make on a day-to-day basis. And that's something that I think students don't necessarily come in anticipating, having to take into consideration and kind of putting those two things together. They can think about the technical aspects of neurosurgery and kind of what type of things they might need to know or learn in order to develop that skill set. But the ethical piece, can you talk a little bit about the role of that in your work and why you thought it was important to highlight that for the participants in the program?
Yeah, I think your point is well taken, is that we don't normally think about ethics and those things. And I wanted to highlight the fact that actually ethics is a component of our day-to-day lives. And so, of course, it's going to bleed into our professional decisions as well. And I hope what they take away is that it's not just at the operating room table or in the clinics or what have you, but that we should really check our biases all along and be aware of the ethical dilemmas that are there. Trauma in particular is one of those fields that I think is fraught with those decisions, because it can be very minute by minute. They can be filled with a lot of do they live, do they not live type decisions. And even our best efforts might result in more mortality and significant morbidity. And I think having people appreciate that just choosing to operate doesn't necessarily take away other decisions that'll come, and the nuances of those decisions. So it's opening their minds to the discussion. And then lastly, I think what it does is hopefully show them that in life, there isn't it's not black and white, right? There isn't a yes, no to everything. And I want them to appreciate that there are multiple facets to every decision and multiple outcomes for every decision, that potential outcomes rather for every decision. So opening them up to being more nimble thinkers.
How about if we ask you to give a couple of examples of the ethical dilemmas that come along with humanity and your work?
Yeah. In the course itself, one of the cases that we talk about is a really famous article written by an Aspen fellow, Rahm Emanuel. He's a surgeon at, I think, at University of Pennsylvania. And you know, the article is Why I Don't Want to Live Past, I think it's 75 or something like that. And he makes a really sort of incredible philosophical argument, which he peppers with a lot of data around decline in cognitive abilities, decline in physical prowess, decline in impact potential. You know, one of the things he cites is anyone who's won the Nobel Prize, like the seminal work they did was before a certain age, things like that. And he also tries to demystify some of the long-held traditions in American medicine in that conversation. And, you know, and then we sort of like use that as a foundation for our discussion, where we then present a case or a couple cases that are people who are approaching those ages or above those ages, and talk through, given this notion that age should be influencing our decisions, how would we approach these particular cases? How did the families think through them? And how do we as a healthcare system think through them? These are real cases that we present. And then it's actually quite interesting because the article ends with Dr. Emanuel saying, but he reserves the right to change his mind, which I also think was a really nice way to say he wasn't coming hard on one end. He was creating this dialogue. And I think that's what we want to do, you know, to say, yes, like you should be aware of this. But at the end of the day, we're human and we can change our mind and we don't have to be necessarily driven only by facts. So it's, we take them through the arc of that paper. And by infusing it with case studies that have very different outcomes and very different family perspectives, where age is central. And then we also have a case where it's not only an older person, but a very young person to talk about the nuances of those decisions as well.
Those are such powerful cases and real life examples for students to think through. I think that's always very meaningful for them.
It's such a huge amount of information that you have to offer. You've got the neuroscience, you've got the surgery part, the ethical part. Do they see video of some neurosurgeries? Do you talk about causes of most trauma? How do you bring it all to them?
It's an interactive format. We give them an overview of foundational information so that they can then engage fully in the cases that we then present, or at least fully to their level. So, you know, we break down some of the terminologies, some of the key things that we look for, those types of things. That's the first part of the lecture. And then we go into sort of the more interactive piece where we bring in the cases and then have sort of a Q&A type component. There are visual images of the cases, scans, etc. Sometimes I have like a model of the brain or the skull or, you know, those types of things.
That must be fascinating for them.
Yeah, I think there are a few programs available to kids at the caliber and level of the CNIX. I think the care, the attention to detail to every nuance of learning and educating young future scientists is not something that's readily available across the board. The level of opportunity, you're getting the best and the brightest in the neurosciences and the psychiatry department, the neuroscience, the neurology, the neurosurgery department, at an, you know, an incredible institution, and you're getting firsthand exposure to them and hopefully inspiring exposure, right? And I think that's rare. You know, most programs like this don't necessarily have access to the array of faculty that CNIX has. And then I think, you know, Laura, your leadership is phenomenal in making sure that every nuance of educating a younger learner is thought about. Everything from things as subtle as breaks that are needed to snacks to takeaways. And then also just in the pay it forward model, like hiring younger people as well. One thing that sticks with me is when we started this and we had to go to COVID and we hired some advisors, youth advisors. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
You know, we had never been on Zoom. Like it was like, you know, a new thing to us. And we hired these youth advisors, which was a testament to your innovation. And I remember meeting with them and the things they shared with us, you know, I mean, anyone over 25 was like, huh, what? You know? And they were like, well, you know, our attention span is going to be this. And so you need to make sure that you have this in breakout room and you need to do this and you need to do that. And, you know, things that we now take for granted as we plan these programs. But if you can imagine at the time, these were not taken for granted. No one really understood how do you capture a younger audience's attention and cater to their specific needs. And by setting up a youth advisory, that was powerful. And I also want to give you kudos in that several of the kids on that advisory could not afford to attend CNIX themselves. And so they were then sponsored to be able to participate in the program. That was also a powerful gift to them. You know, I think it's a rare opportunity, the caliber of the subjects that you cover, access to world-class scientists, and then catering it to the specific learner to make this program unique.
Thank you so much for that, Odette. And you're right, the Youth Advisory Board was a great experience, an extremely helpful conversation, set of conversations with those young people. And they provided an incredible service.
And look at what came out of a really horrible thing, COVID, and having to be distant from each other. But now you offer this program on Zoom in addition to in-person, which makes it affordable and accessible to more people.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's not your typical Zoom. And I love that.
Thank you. Well, you mentioned the staff mentors and the faculty and the participants, all of these different components of the program make it what it is. And I'd say that having faculty like you is one of our biggest assets. And so we really appreciate your time every year. We appreciate your time today to talk about it. And just thank you for being a part of it, helping to really bring this information to a new generation of hopefully future neuroscience leaders who are inspired by the work that you and our colleagues do.
Well, thank you. It means a lot for you to say that. All of us do this because it's very meaningful to us. And for me, it's an opportunity to pay it forward because somebody believed in me and I love that. So hopefully in a generation, we have a lot more people who feel that they're where they are because other people took the time to invest in them.
Stanford professor and neurosurgeon, Dr. Odette Harris. One of the thought-provoking presenters participants get to spend time with in the CNIX program. Learn more about Dr. Harris by checking our podcast notes for a link to her profile. That's where you'll also find the link to the Clinical Neuroscience Immersion Experience, including application and financial assistance information, along with the bios of additional presenters, some of whom you'll hear from in this CNIX mini-series on What Makes Up Your Mind. With CNIX Program Manager, Dr. Laura Turner-Essel, I'm Jane McMillan. Thanks for being with us. You've been listening to What Makes Up Your Mind? Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health from the experts in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences Stanford University School of Medicine. For more information on this program and all of our transformational work, visit us at med.stanford.edu/psychiatry. What Makes Up Your Mind? Updates from the frontiers of neuroscience, well-being, and mental health is a production of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University School of Medicine, a copyright of the Board of Trustees of Stanford University.